Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. For the second year in a row, Port Hope resident Angela Grogan is promoting Black History Month in Northumberland. She has already participated in several events commemorating February as a time to honor the various contributions of Black Canadians. Joining her is Dan Buchanan, the history guy of Brighton. He is author of multiple books on local history, in particular the sinking of the HMS Speedy off Presque Isle Park and the building of the Murray Canal. He will offer some rare insights into local history related to Black Canadians in reference to the Speedy and the Carrying Place on the eastern border of Northumberland. Have a listen. I'm so pleased to welcome to Consider This Northumberland Angela Grogan, a Port Hope resident, and Dan Buchanan, a local historian and the history guy of Brighton. Welcome to you both.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert, for having me.
Angela, you have already been involved in some events marking Black History Month in Port Hope. There was a Pan-African flag raising that took place on February 3rd and a second flag raising at Northumberland County Building. Can you share what happened at these two events?
Well, these two events were in format of a ceremony where we have the raising of the flag and then we had a proclamation in Port Hope, but we didn't have it at the county because they already read the proclamation from inside their council chambers. And our proclamation was attended in Port Hope by residents, and there were approximately 21 6th to grade 8 students that came in from Coburg, a private school, to watch and to be part of the ceremony. And that was so enlightening for me to see. In Northumberland County, it was basically the staff. And again, the willingness and the recognition was there, and the observance of Black History Month continues for the month of February.
Now, some people may not know what the Pan-African flag is. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, the Pan-African flag was adopted from various countries in Africa, and it comes with three different stripes. And I always say to people, to understand why the flag was chosen, you have to understand the stripes. So when you look at the Pan-African flag, you're going to have a red stripe, you'll have a black stripe and a green stripe. And to summarize it, the black stripe signifies the identity and heritage of Black people around the world, not only in Africa, but around the world. It represents our pride, our strength, and unity of the African diaspora. We acknowledge a shared history, experiences, and culture of Black people that's unique to us globally. That's the black stripe. Then I should have started with a red stripe, but let's look at that. The red stripe is one of the most profound symbols. It's the bloodshed and the sacrifice that some individuals fought for freedom, liberation, and equality throughout history and still continues to fight for. When we look at the green stripe on the flag, it represents the abundant natural resources and the lush vegetation of Africa. It also signifies the importance of a prosperous and future African nations, not only one seen around the world in severe poverty, but a people who are progressive, innovative, and contributing to all economic and social backgrounds around the world.
Now, Angela, you used a term diaspora. Can you tell our listeners what that means in case they don't know?
Yeah, so the diaspora is in the days of slavery when the ships went into Africa and collected human beings, they dispersed us to different places. And along with that, we were sent to, some were sent to the US on slave ships, to the Caribbean, to di different plantations under the colonial system. So collectively, we now come together and we use the word diaspora to say, yes, we're from Africa, but we were dispersed throughout the world.
Now, can you tell me about the potluck brunch held earlier this month at the Masonic Temple in Port Hope?
The potluck brunch was again a brain idea Angela had because, you know, we're looking to engage our community. And we had a very well attended potluck. Residents came out. There was large numbers of Port Hope Police Service there. And the mayor of Port Hope was there. There was a minister who's running for the Liberal Party. He made an attendance. It was not considered political, not formal in any way. So there was no introductions of any dignitaries who were in the room. And my aim was for people to walk in, say hello, get to meet people, play some games, and watch a movie. And it did work out.
How many people did you count?
Yes, we took a survey. It's really important that we're beginning to take surveys because we also need them to build our database and to build our connections with the community. And we had 65 people in and out.
Now, what kind of food was shared?
Ah, the food is always the best part. Local residents were encouraged to bring their own food. So we had foods that we would consider non-African. We had main courses from the Caribbean, which was our soups, which was beef soup, chicken soup. And our soups are not just soups, they're actually stews, and there's a meal in it. Some people bought the traditional peas and rice with their jerk pork and jerk chicken. I had a beet salad that the mayor of Port Hope brought, and I sort of was so glad there was leftovers because the next morning I had poached eggs with her salad because I really liked it so much. So there was an introduction of new foods, new games, and new connections.
The theme for this year, Black History Month, is Black Legacy and Leadership, celebrating Canadian history and uplifting future generations. Can you explain what that means to you?
Well, it means to me that before I arrived in Canada in 1977, there was already Black people contributing to Canada in very many ways, whether it was resisting oppression like Viola Davis, who's on our $10 bill. So again, she showed leadership in her resistance and she left a legacy in her resistance. And then we look at, you know, Governor generals being appointed. We look at our judicial system. We look at our educational system. And in those systems, you could find Black people at the rim. Not to mention the medical field that we sometimes overlook the contributions and innovations, not of Black Americans, but Black Canadians.
What is the Northumberland Diverse People's Coalition?
Well, our mission is not only about Black people. Our mission is to work with our community collectively. And we welcome all members of our community, but the focus is on promoting equity, equitable opportunities, which sometimes are lacking because of the lack of information that's available. So, again, our mission is to empower people and help people who feel marginalized or voiceless to have voices. And we've been doing it on the quiet side in many areas.
How long has that group been formed?
It's been form officially registered as not-for-profit on February 28th, 2024. So we're coming up to our first year. But in our first year, we've accomplished many great things.
How many members do you have?
Well, I would say from the board of directors, we have five, but when we look at our membership, which we sort of gauge based on the Facebook group page, we consider them members. So right now, I believe we're up to 138 people, but they're people who are actively involved.
You alluded to this earlier, and I want to come back to it, and that is the range of activities that this group does. It's not just Black History Month. You guys do a lot of stuff. Can you just give us a nice little grocery list of the things that you've been involved in over the last year?
Well, in February, before we were registered, we did Black History Month. And then on March in May, we went and we hosted a Caribbean luncheon, and that was Caribbean dinner and gala. That was to raise money for a steel band concert that we brought to Memorial Park in Port Hope on September 27th. And these events will be a reoccurring again because they were well attended and we got applause from the neighborhood, especially the steel band concert.
Dan, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I understand when you were researching your book on the Speedy, you came across some interesting and relevant information. Can you give us, first of all, a quick synopsis of the story of the speeding before you get into this interesting discovery?
Yes, thank you. I'd always known about the story of the HMS Speedy because it happened off Presqu'île where the ship was lost in 1804, but I'd never really seen it written up properly in the way that I like to do history stories. And I came across documents from the guy who was doing the diving in Presqu'île in the 1990s who thought he had found the remains of the Speedy, and so I had to do the book. And in the process of that, I did kind of the deep dive research that I always do and found a lot of documents about how the government was working in 1804, the social structure, the issues that were going on at the time. And one of the really interesting things that came out in the documents about the approach to slavery at the time was that it was in flux, and different people in society had different opinions of it. And I had two clear examples that I put in the book. Related to people that were participating in the story. Robert Gray was one of the men that was lost on the Speedy. He was the Solicitor General at the time, so an important guy. He was fairly young. He had a family of house slaves. They called them house servants. A woman, basically, who had raised him from when he was a child, and her two sons. And one of the sons went with him on the ship and was lost with him. But before he went on the ship, he wrote a will in which he stipulated that in the event of his death, all of his slaves would get their freedom. And he stipulated that some of his land acquisitions, of which he had a lot, would go to the remaining members of that family. And that's, in fact, what happened after he was lost, is that John, the other family member, brother of Simon, was gained land in the Oshawa area. So that was a one example of kind of, I guess, a more liberal approach to it at the time. But it also demonstrates that people had brought slaves up with them from when they came to Canada, like in the 1780s and 90s. His father had brought this woman that she had worked for him in the States before they came up. So they had long re relationship. And then you had the other kind of opposing opinion was that Peter Russell, who had been the administrator of Upper Canada before or after Lieutenant Governor Simcoe left, he had lost his job when Peter Hunter came in. He was, I think, the registrar at this time. But a couple of years after the Speedy was lost, there's an ad in the Upper Canada Gazette where Peter Russell is wanting to sell his slaves, his house servants. And it goes through that standard logic, or sorry, the standard verbiage that you would probably see in an ad in South Carolina in the 1700s, that telling the virtues of the woman can cook and sew, and the man's a strong young boy, and the woman's worth $150 and the son's worth $200, and that he would reduce that by a quarter if he could get cash. Like, it's disgusting to read that in our context today. But it does demonstrate that there was very different ways of approaching this issue by different people. Peter Russell was very pragmatic, and he wasn't bothered so much by the moral issue of it. He just didn't want to give up his investment in this asset. And a lot of people thought that way. I mean, when the eventually British outlawed slavery, they had to compensate people because these people were still considered financial assets. So how I just thought that was a good demonstration of the different ways that people dealt with it, and that the attitude towards that extremely horrible way of dealing with people was just evolving through time. And it gladly has evolved. I mean, but it was evolving even before it was fully outlawed. Anyways, just two kind of very stark examples.
You also make another reference that you discovered to Carrying Place, which is located just east of Brighton. Can you tell us about that as well?
Yes, I've been studying that area for my next book, and I've dealt very deeply with the major families that settled there first, and that's Robert Young, Asa Weller, and Robert Wilkins. And there are references to the Young family in particular having slaves when they came there to help them build the log house they built and whatnot. It's very vague. And it's clear that, most of that kind of reference has been written out of our history. People just are uncomfortable with it. They don't want to say it. We only see the odd occasional thing that was written in a very early time when it wasn't so much considered to be a bad thing to say that you had slaves. But a lot of, I think a lot of Canadians would be surprised at the degree in which the United Empire Loyalists that came up from the States after the War of Independence brought their slaves with them. If that makes us uncomfortable, it should, but it's a fact of history.
I want to pursue that a little bit more because I think this is really seminal. I mean, as Canadians, we take great pride in our role in the Underground Railroad and assisting in the liberation of American slaves fleeing the South around the time of the Civil War. And yet, here you are sharing information of a local nature. And there's just another side to this where some Canadians were slave owners, and we don't hear much about that, if at all. And I guess, Angela, I'll go back to you for a moment. Why is that?
Okay, so I will give a present day approach to it. Let's look at social media. So I post in a number of Facebook pages, and anytime one of my posts reflects to slavery, it's not allowed to be posted. The only thing that they seem comfortable with in dealing with Black people is around our food and our music. Anything else to do with our intellectual properties or innovations, the sufferings that we've gone through in slavery, some of the modern day injustices make people very uncomfortable. And I myself wonder why. And here's why I think it is. Sometimes for me to be comfortable with you, I have to be comfortable with myself and my biases. And they have these underground currents of their own biases within their families in private. So when you are in an administrative position on a Facebook page and a Black woman who you might describe as angry or bold bring forth an issue, you can shut it down because you have the power and the authority. So again, it's a system that has been evolving.
Angela, I want to take some time to talk to you about recent efforts to undermine the diversity, equity, and inclusive measures that some have been trying to take. The new U.S. administration announced an executive order from the president to end, in, I'm quoting here, radical and wasteful government DEI programs and preferencing. When you see initiatives like this, how do you respond?
Well, I respond that the president doesn't know what DEI is because DEI is not a political movement. DEI is not based on race. So when he directs it, I think as a Black woman, I am not seeing that targeting me. I'm say targeting a number of institutions, a number of people that will be marginalized, like the disabled, who could probably not have parking spaces, as simple as that, if you're going to erase DEI. DEI has been put in place to create an equitable platform for people who normally wouldn't have been able to have that opportunity on their own. So you could see some of the damage that's being done with it right now, and it will continue. Men would lose their paternity leave. Women could lose their maternal leave. Disabled people could lose, again, going back to their privileges. And it is not race based to me. So I keep telling my friends, don't think it has to do with Blacks only. It started with trying to find equitable job opportunities for Black people, but it's evolved bigger than that.
How well do you think, Angela, Northumberland County is doing and its municipalities are doing when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion? I know you've lobbied hard to raise awareness. We've talked about this last year. How would you characterize any of the changes you've seen, and are we making progress?
Our progress is so slow and so fragmented. So let's go back and look at the raising of the Black History flag in Port Hope for the second year. It is raised from the community flagpole outside of our municipal office. You drive around, the only other recognition of a flag is from Cameco, Northumberland Hospital. Port Hope Police, I believe to this day, has not raised the flag. Every municipal building still have two Canadian flags. No one thinks about it. So it seems as though the whole notion or celebration of Black History Month has to do with only one voice, Angela Grogan, one organization, NDPC. So I took upon myself to go into all the banks on after raising the flag and handing out souvenirs based on Black History Month. And it was surprised me. There was like, oh, it is Black History Month. The awareness is not heightened. It is not highlighted. When we look at our libraries, minimum. No activities, our rec centers, no activities. And I think this is a great opportunity, not just for Black History Month, but for our tourism department, for our cultural awareness that is being neglected.
Dan, you study our local history in great depth. How much diversity do you come across in your research?
It depends on what you mean by diversity. Back in the day, the diversity was, were you Scottish or were you Irish? And that was the difference. Not much in earlier times, but I went through, I was a young fellow teenager in the 60s, and the next several decades from that saw like a real burgeoning of our contact with diverse peoples. And going up on the farm in the middle of the country, you didn't have much access to other types of folks. I mean, it was just the way it was. We had a, I hate to say it, my grandfather used to call the neighbor we had up at Codrington the Chinaman, because he was the only Chinese person, was the only Chinese family in the whole region. And of course, they ran the Chinese restaurant in Brighton. Those were very, very small steps. And until we got out in the world and went to Toronto and places where there was diversity, we had to learn what that meant. And I think that's an experience for a lot of folks who've grown up in this area. It's been very conservative, very white, you can say. And it's been a learning process. And I think it's been tremendous over the last, I'm in my 70s now, so I've seen a lot of this change, and I think it's nothing but good to have all sorts of different voices and different cultural approaches and whatnot. But for some people, it's been uncomfortable. But I mean, this is the To me, this is the definition of being Canadian, is that we have this diversity and we have benefit from it. I think it's partly a main part of what Canada's been built on. So, yeah, it's been excellent growth I've seen.
Angela, do you have anything to add to that?
I still think that in our region, when we're looking at job opportunities, when we're looking at employment, even in our police ambulance, I discovered that we have a black paramedic and I met his family and I will step out to say he's the only black paramedic we have, a young guy. I was able to talk to him on a friendly basis and he shared some of his experiences. His family are Indigenous Black people, and they came out of Preston, Nova Scotia. And if you know the history of Canada and Nova Scotia, in particular the Blacks who came, the first pioneers who were loyalists, who came over to help fight, and the way they were treated, their churches were burnt, their stuff was thrown in garbage dump trucks and thrown away. After they've dedicated so much service to Canada, you could understand that Canada is not in any way different to what the US was to slavery. But we're very good at hiding things.
I'm going to ask you both this question, and I'll start with Dan. If you were to give advice to listeners as to how they can better appreciate our diverse population in Northumberland, what would you suggest?
Oh gosh, I just see the burgeoning of literature and art and performing art as well in the country from the Indigenous community, from the African American community, from all different diverse directions that's available to us to use, to enjoy and to see. I mean, it's there. Yeah, I mean, people sit down and search things on the internet that are, for their daily minute by minute benefit, and that stuff's all available for people to learn about the people who are diverse in this area and get more familiar with them. And if it takes going to a show of some kind or reading a book of some kind, that's a small price to pay. There's plenty of opportunity. It's the opportunity and the material is there. I think there's lots of it. It's just a matter of getting people to put the effort in.
Angela, how about you? What advice would you give?
I would say we have to start with the very young children right now, because sometimes unconscious biases are so embedded. Again, we'll go back to that uncomfortable feeling for adults that it would always not be comfortable to some degree, and there would be barriers that would be in place. However, if we start with children in history in schools, if we teach them the true Canadian history, and we allow them to see what Dan has been speaking about and to understand why Blacks that they might see a wrong Northumberland, since we're dealing with our community, plays a valuable role into the development of Canada and this region. We'll also want to see the institutions that have been on the marginal sidelines, just appeasing the bare necessity to recognize Black History Month and to give Black country recognize our contributions. And I go back to my presentation in Council in Port Hope last year, which is on YouTube. You could see half the presentation I presented, the material. No, some of them didn't have a clue. So if we're going to be running for public service, I think one of the first things we have to be able to do, not only about Black people, about the populations that are in our town, is to become familiar with them, their customs, celebrate them, and based on that, let the doors open for inclusion. And not to be seen only as someone who would hold a celebration in February or a steel band concert. Just allow us to be part of the community in a meaningful way.
Angela Grogan, Dan Buchanan, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to meet you, Dan.
You too. Thanks.
That was Port Hope resident Angela Grogan and Dan Buchanan, local historian and the history guy of Brighton. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.